It is 9:30. Boker Tov, everybody. We can get started if you have your kavod with you. Great. If not, not. I mentioned last night, I really don't know what to say. There are no words to describe what happened in Israel overnight. And just the refuah shleima to all those who were injured. And we shouldn't know from such things. It's, just an added tragedy to all the difficulties we've been having for a year. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us through, and we should hear only good things for the Jewish people and for the world at large. Okay, Pirkei Avot, we're Perek Dalet, the fourth Perek, Mishnah Beit, second Mishnah, Ben Azai Omer. We discussed last week wisdom and strength and wealth and honor, and that many hopefully beautiful insights into that. And we began last week just giving a little bit Ben Azai. Like Benzoma. Benzoma and Benazai are not mentioned. They're who they are. They're mentioned only as the sons of their parents, their fathers, because they didn't get smicha. That's how it's generally seen. We have a few Bens, not so many. Not so many in Talmud. It's not so nice to call somebody Ben. Give him their own name. The Gemara makes big deals about names. If you one of the ways to lose your share in the world to come, the Talmud says, is to give your friend a nickname. Calling somebody by a nickname. That's in the same place in the Talmud, in Bava Metzia, where the Gemara talks about if you embarrass somebody in public, you lose your share in the world to come. That's in the same place. The Gemara says that if you call somebody by a nickname, and there's a whole discussion, and I'm like, what if he likes the nickname? Is that okay? Only a derogatory nickname, but that's not our issue. But the idea of calling somebody by names is such an important idea in the Torah, how we name people and what their names are, etc. So it's very kind of almost like striking and jarring. You come to like Ben Azai, Ben Zoma. We have later on in the Pirkei Avot, we'll have Ben Heihei and Ben Bagbag, very, very strange names. We'll have to discuss, please God, when we get there. Ben Hey, Ben Bagbag. We have Ben Nanas, who appears so often, and that's about it. Maybe if you, Ben Batera, but Ben Batera often is sort of a whole family. The Bnei Batera, that's the people who were the heads of the Jewish people until Hillel came along, and they didn't know what to do when Shabbos fell. When Erev Pesach fell on Shabbos, like it did this year, if you could bring the Korban Pesach, there was a transfer of power from Bnei Batera to Hillel. No. Anyway, but we added with what we discussed last week. We discussed Ben Azai never got married. Nafshi Chashka B'Torah, and we discussed that it's not really right. It's not right at all, except that the Rambam says that someone who's truly, truly, truly like learns, that's all they care about in life. It means they've never been to a movie in their life. They don't read a newspaper. They don't go for exercise. I don't know. They do nothing except learning. Somebody who's like that, a meshugana, basically, not normal. Somebody who's a little bit not normal, but okay, there are people who are not normal, but not normal in a sort of positive sense. So the Rambam writes, he's not a sinner. The Rambam does not say that's a good thing. He just says he's not a sinner. And we explain, Rav Soloveitchik says, one who teaches Torah, who devotes his life to teaching Torah, your students are your children. So it's a sort of partial fulfillment, Mitzvah Peruvu. And then we discuss how the Mitzvah Peruvu underwent a change at Mamad Har Sinai from originally Peruvu was to populate the world. And then once the Torah was given, the Peruvu became the method of which we passed down our tradition from one generation to the next. I didn't find the answer yet. I mentioned last week that the Rambam says that we only have mitzvot given at Har Sinai and afterwards, so throughout the, in the desert, in the Torah. But anything prior to Sinai is very nice. They're very important lessons, but there's nothing obligatory. And that's why Peruvu and Brit Milah are repeated last week in Tazria. The mitzvot are repeated because only if the mitzvah appears after Mamad Har Sinai. So somebody asked me, and I've had this problem. I have to, hopefully I'll find a solution. Gita Nasha, I'm not aware that Gita Nasha is mentioned anywhere else except by Yaakov. but anyways, be that as it may, Ben Azai did not engage in Peruvu as is the biological way, the way the Torah would like, and he engaged in it in a separate way. And Because some people, unfortunately, are not blessed with children. Okay, that's God's will. And there are other ways, there are other things you can do. And that's what the Haftorah of, we read on fast days, that even greater than children is making a Yad Vashem, of course, and supporting Torah and teaching Torah and Kol Shomer Shabbat Michalalo, etc. So there are ways. But to fulfill, in everybody has their own task in life, and different people sometimes are challenged that there's certain things that maybe the norm for others are not the norm for you. That's a challenge we, I guess, in many ways we all face. Some face it in more obvious ways and some in less obvious ways. But okay, let's get to what Ben Azai says. Ben Azai Omer, have a rats, the mitzvah kala, kibbechamur, you should run to a mitzvah kala. So we're going to spend a little bit of time trying to figure out what exactly does it mean, a mitzvah kala, a light mitzvah, kibbechamura, like heavy or strict. Chumras, it's heavy, strict. Uborech min aveira, and run away. So the first thing, when I sort of just read the Mishnah, what, you know, sometimes weird things pop into my mind. Heavy ruts, the mitzvah kala, kibbechamura. So I was thinking the Mishnah in Bava Kama says, which talks on torts. What happens begins if my animal injures your animal. We could put in modern terms, you get into a car accident, who has to pay, etc. So we have this principle, Adam Muat La'olam. A person is always responsible for what they do, unlike your animal necessarily. But you're, no, even if it's a complete accident, even if it's not your fault, Adam Muat La'olam, a person always has to pay for his damages, even if he's asleep. Even a person who's sleeping and he's, you know, put the lamp away, your neighbor's lamp away, so you don't break it while you're in the middle of your sleep. You're you roll around a lot when you sleep. It doesn't matter. You're always responsible. So the Mishnah explains, okay, but whose fault? What's considered damage? So, for example, it's interesting. In the time of the Mishnah, I could take my ox and walk my ox on Fifth Avenue or on the Rehov Yafo, whatever, on a major thoroughfare. And if it knocks over your bike, it steps on your bike, I don't have to pay, because the assumption was that everybody knew that oxes would be walking in the marketplace. People, that's how people transported back then. So anything that's normal in a public domain, so people have to be on the lookout for it. It's not my fault. It's your fault for not taking care. Anyways, the Mishnah says if two people are running in a public area and they bump into each other, so they don't have to pay. Even if, because neither has to pay, because people run. Everybody knows that you're in the street. People run in the streets. What can you do? So the Gemara actually says, it's interesting, that's only true on Friday afternoons. The Gemara sort of limits the teaching of the Mishnah only on Fridays before Shabbos. People are in a hurry, so everybody knows you can expect people to run. But if you're going for a nice stroll on the street and somebody's running and he bumps into you, they have to pay. They have to pay for all their damages, which is sort of a general concept that if you want to do a mitzvah, it's very nice, but you can never do it at the expense of somebody else. That's the real idea here. I'm not allowed to do it at the expense of anybody else. And the most famous example is probably a worker. A worker is not allowed to daven very long. It's such a beautiful halacha. You want to daven, you want to, you know, that's very nice. You want to, don't do it on your boss's time. Do it on your own time. And the Mishnah says, you, if you're working out in the field, so you say Shema in the field, even if you're on top of a tree, you're not allowed to climb down from the tree to say Shema. I have to say with Kavana, close my eyes, you know, Shema Yisrael, take 5 minutes to say an Achad, you know, 20 seconds. You can't do that. That's very nice when you're home, when you're your own boss, you can do what you want, but you can never do mitzvot at the expense of other people. This is a very important principle that we often lose track of, that it's forbidden sometimes to do a mitzvah if that mitzvah is going to have negative effect on somebody else. It's very important in terms of a marriage. Very often one spouse wants to become more observant than the other. That's not the way they were when they got married. It's not necessarily allowed. You have to get the permission. For sure, if it's an extra stricture, we don't have to do that. That's not thing. So when you do mitzvot, you have to do it on your own schedule. That's really an aside. Nothing to do with what Ben Azai is saying. I was just saying heavy ruts. The mitzvah kalabek kechamur, you got to run. But if you're running to do a mitzvah, it's no excuse. If you bang into people or you hit people, and I know I've always often quoted Rabbi Shlomo, Salanter has so many beautiful sayings and teachings, the founder of the Musar movement in the 19th century. He realized that It's much easier to observe ritual than ethics. It's so much easier. You know, we're used to it. We're creatures of habit. You daven, you what is what we do. We keep kosher, we eat matzah. I mean, you know, no observant Jew would ever not do these things. But the ethical stuff, that's a lot harder. And, you know, you said, what's the most important thing about shul on Yom Kippur? What should you have in mind? He says, when you're running to shul late, you know, you're just eating. When you go to your seat, don't step on somebody's toes. You know, people are sitting there. Don't disturb the person who's sitting there. We know that's a halacha. By the way, please God, people will soon go back to shuls. Maybe some people already are in the States, in Israel. You know, you're not allowed to pass about 8 feet, four and what, in front of anybody who's davening. It disturbs him. You know that, even though he may have his eyes closed and he's davening and he's looking at his sitter and you're like 7 feet away, just walking by, everybody notices. You notice what's around you. I can't do that. So you see this all the time. People walk into shul and they just walk to their seats and people are davening. You can't do that. You have to daven outside. While they're davening, which means the Shmon Esrei, you're not allowed to walk in front of anybody. So that's just an important principle. It's wonderful to do mitzvot, but never at the expense of other people. That's, you got to do it at your own time and place. Okay, but let's discuss what exactly does it mean a mitzvah kala. So anybody want to throw out? I know people don't. You know what's a mitzvah kala? So on the surface, and if anybody wants to write in their chat box or something. So a mitzvah kala, a light mitzvah. So you could explain it. It's easy. It's an easy mitzvah. It's kal. Kal, and you know, it's very easy to do. Or you can explain it as a less important mitzvah. It's a mitzvah kal. It's not so important. We know, even though people sometimes are taught not this way, we know there's a great hierarchy in the mitzvot, and some mitzvot are more important than others. So the question is, so we'll have to see both those explanations. We'll get in a moment that the Beit Yisrael is going to get four explanations for what the word kala, mitzvah kala, means. So we've already had this in Perek Beit, Rebbe Omer, that you should be zahir, you should be as careful with a mitzvah kala as by a mitzvah chamor. You should be as careful in your observance. There it implies it's something less important. Even if it's less important, you should be, you should take it just as seriously. Because ultimately, we do not know the reward for mitzvot. We don't know which mitzvot gets a greater reward. So that's normally true. There are very few mitzvot in the Torah that we're given a reward for. You know, honoring parents and shiluach hakan and honest business weights. That's about it. In general, the Torah says, if you keep the mitzvot, you'll have a long life. But we don't really know what particular mitzvah leads to what reward. So there, the idea is very much on reward. Here, the emphasis is a little bit different. Shemitzvah goreret mitzvah, v'aveira goreret aveira. One mitzvah leads to another, and one sin leads to another. In other words, it's not that we run to a mitzvah kala, because once you get involved in the right environment, we are creatures of habit, and we're influenced by our environment, and we work on autopilot. That's how we work. And so you want to be an autopilot in the right place. You know Chaim Soloveitchik in his seminal article that was reviewed this year, that wrote 25 years ago now, a little over 25 years ago, on, you know, rupture and reconstruction, on the changes in the Orthodox community, that, you know, you don't have articles like this. And 25 years later, tradition had a whole symposium on the article. So he discusses that issue, that, you know, people, they put on tzitzis in the morning, whatever, then people, we do mitzvah, we don't even think what we're doing. So on the one hand, that's very nice. It's a natural habit. You know, we're so used to it. That's beautiful. That's rabbit. Of course, on the other hand, it's not so nice. It means we're not really thinking about what we are doing. But the reason our Mishnah seems to be saying you want to run to a mitzvah kala is because once you start doing any mitzvah, you're in the right group of people, you're in the right environment, you're going to do other mitzvahs. A mitzvah goreret mitzvah. That one mitzvah will lead to another. So it doesn't matter the mitzvah is easy, the mitzvah is unimportant. It's not so much, you're not running to the mitzvah to do that mitzvah necessarily. That's the way the Mishnah seems to read. You're running to any mitzvah because one mitzvah leads to another. That's true. We all know that's true so much in life. That Rav Soloveitchik has that notion. One of our claims on tshuva is that it's not our fault. You know, what do we do? And what Rav Soloveitchik says is ultimately, you know, once we make decision A, often decisions B and C are made for us. We all know that. So the problem is, it's true, you didn't want to do B and C, but once you did A, you're kind of stuck. It's fascinating. The example he gave, I believe, was somebody sending a child to, whatever, a secular university in the dormitories where it's not the problem, whatever, not the environment. I don't want to get into that whole discussion, but I think that's the example he uses. And then it turns out that, you know, the person is led astray. So nobody wanted the person to lead astray, but A leads to B and B leads to C and C leads to D. So it's very important. I don't know where to draw the line. I don't know exactly, but the point of the Mishnah is get into the concept of doing mitzvot, because one mitzvah leads to another. Now we mentioned before, I think just a couple of weeks ago, the Meshech Chachma, saying that that certain mitzvot take on a greater historical importance at given times. We mentioned that, of course, in our generation, the mitzvah of settling the land of Israel is clearly it was a mitzvah in the 1200s too, but it was sort of a meaningless mitzvah in the 1200s. And even if you made aliyah, like the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid or the many of the Balei HaTosfot made aliyah, it didn't really impact. There was nothing there. Nothing could happen. You couldn't develop. You didn't have autonomy. So the mitzvah, it didn't really have much meaning, even though the value and change in Torah is the same mitzvah, but obviously it's much different. That's clearly, I think today, by the way, just to add that we live in a generation where, 80% of Jews are not observant. So I think I would say the mitzvah, we read it, it's this week's Parsha, tying to Parsha Teshuva, the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, the mitzvah of sanctifying God's name. What I mean by that, I mean acting in a way where non-religious Jews say, wow, being a religious Jew is such a beautiful thing. Observant Jews are so nice and pleasant. And, we know that's not always true. Rav Soloveitchik used to comment often that then you're not going to convince anybody to become a religious Jew by talking about on ritual. The only way to convince somebody, he says, is how we act in our business dealings. And when somebody knows that the word of a Shabbos Jew is his action, a Shomer Shabbos Jew, his actions are business, are so wonderful. That's the way we sanctify God's name. So every generation has mitzvot that are become more important. That's the idea. We don't know the reward for mitzvot because the reward can change in every generation. There's also, we don't know all the people we're dealing with. This is a very important point. I think it's an obvious point, but again, often the obvious things have to be said. There are personal factors at play. You know, sometimes the Gemara says, what was the greatness of Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai? Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai say, we would not be here today if not for Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. There would be no Shir, there would be no Judaism. His saving of his willing to give up the temple, if you want to look at it from that angle, his willingness to give up Yerushalayim to set up a Torah center in some hick town in Yavna on the coast, that's what saved Judaism, the beginning of rabbinic Judaism. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is the hero of the Jewish people. And the Gemara talks about how great he was. What does the Gemara say how great he was? That lo hikdimo adam shalom me'olam afilu akum bashuk. Nobody ever said hello to him first. He was the first person to greet everybody, even the idolaters on the street. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai saying hello to somebody, you think it's a minor thing, and you know what? Many people may not care. It may be so. You didn't say hello to them. You passed them on Shabbos. You didn't say good Shabbos. It may not be nice, but may not be a big deal. But you know what? There may be somebody. Something's going on in their life, or they're having a bad day, or something. And you greeting them on the street can be such an important mitzvah, such a wonderful thing. And that's true all the time. In other words, a mitzvah is not just the object mitzvah, but especially mitzvah between man and man. So it depends on the situation. Man, there's such a subjective factor, and that's impossible for any human being to know the impact of mitzvah when I do another person. So you have to be very careful. And you can't say this is more important, this is less important, because we really don't know. Okay, but Ben Azai is really talking that we are creatures of habit. Now, mitzvah gorer mitzvah, one mitzvah leads to another, and schar mitzvah mitzvah, schar uskar avera avera. The reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah, and reward for an avera, the reward for an avera, sin is in a sin. So what does that mean? What do you mean the reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah? So along the lines, we're saying it's in the context, it seems to be, well, I just explained, Ben Azai saying, run to a little mitzvah, because once you get in the habit of doing a mitzvah, you go with that people, they're doing a mitzvah, I'm going to run there. And I'm going to really run as long as I don't hurt somebody on the way. I'm going to run, that's going to lead to a mitzvah. So the reward for my going to a mitzvah kala will be I'll get to do other mitzvah. By doing one, you get to do the others. That's like I don't know if they have that in any game shows. When I was a kid, I don't think they had that in the States. Reach for the top, right? Anybody know what reach for the top is? Excuse me. That was a game show of high school kids. It was really, we used to watch it as a kid. It was a really fascinating show. It was high school students from different schools would compete. And, you know, it was high level. As if I'm not mistaken,
Alex Trebek.
Thank you. That's what I was about to say. I blanked on his name. Alex Trebek, the famous host of Jeopardy, who just passed away, who is a Canadian. Some of you may know, born in Sudbury, I believe, and lived in Canada. So he was host of the show, Reach for the Top. So often they would have like a one question, and the team that answered that question would only that team have the right to answer four other questions. Like once you get A, you get B, C, D, and E. But if you don't get A, you don't get B, C, D, and A. So that's exactly what it means. Your schar mitzvah mitzvah. You get the reward for doing the first mitzvah. You get an opportunity to do B, C, D, and E, which you wouldn't get if you don't do A. That's the same thing where Soloveitchik was saying. One sin leads to another. So that's one of the schar mitzvah, the reward for mitzvah, you'll get to do another mitzvah. The other interpretation, schar mitzvah, is the reward for the mitzvah is the mitzvah itself. What does that mean? So if you're going to say there's no reward for mitzvah, that's something very dangerous to say. That the only reward is a mitzvah, that's dangerous. Why is that dangerous? Because the Gemara explains that's how tzaddik and vaitis. Last year we discussed the beginning of the Mishnah. You should worship God. Amen. Shalom amenat lekaba pras. And that's the Gemara assumes it's stukim by tusim. If you don't believe there's reward for mitzvot, so many people are going to reject the whole system. You can't blame them. That's normal. It's okay to want reward. It's normal. And the Torah promises it left and right. We say it every day. That's what we say every day. Reward and punishment is very important. So to say that schar mitzvah mitzvah, the reward for a mitzvah is a mitzvah and nothing else, that's wrong. It's not true. And it wouldn't be correct. So we're not talking here philosophically, but besides the idea at least other mitzvah, the true ultimate reward for the mitzvah is the mitzvah itself. You could argue it's the fact that I help somebody. That's the real mitzvah. In other words, it's true I make it a reward, but the real reward for the mitzvah is I help somebody. I gave them a job. I made them feel good. I helped them in some way. That's the real mitzvah. Second, along with that, it's not the same thing, is the feeling I get. In other words, the schar mitzvah, the reward for the mitzvah is I help somebody. That's it. Forget reward. That's a separate thing. The ultimate reward in the mitzvah is I help somebody else. That's great. We're talking, obviously, that only works ben adam l'chaveiro, that it's I help somebody. That's A. B, and this would work ben adam l'chaveiro and ben adam l'makom, is the joy I feel when I do a mitzvah. That you have a good feeling. I helped somebody. I did something right. So most people, when they do something right, feel good. I know there's research done that then big givers, people who write checks, let's say, I remember years ago reading a book, they interviewed a whole bunch of people. The book was written 25, 30 years ago. So anybody who had given $1 million or more, they only interview people who are given at least $1 million. And they spoke to them. It wasn't a Jewish book. They spoke to them. And they, most of these people said they had such a feeling of joy when they gave money, you know, when they helped them. The feeling you get, that's the real reward for a mitzvah. And that's a beautiful thing. We should love to do mitzvot. And that's the Bartanura and the Mishnah explained that the joy and the pleasure you get from a mitzvah is a great mitzvah. It's in and of itself. So I just want to point out along those lines. Here, this is the book, Eglay Tal. I don't know if anybody can see. Anybody know? The Eglay Tal is a book written by the Sukkot Shofar Rebbe. He was a Hasidic Rebbe. He died, I believe, at the turn of the 20th century. I believe, for people who live in Toronto, that when Rabbi Price was a young child, he learned by the Sukkot Shofar Rebbe. Perhaps his other book is more famous, the Avnei Nezer. He wrote the response to Avnei Nezer. And by the way, he was the one who wrote about the mitzvah of living in Israel nowadays. When Rav Schachter, I mentioned last week, said that the mitzvah of our generation is living in Israel. That's the historical mitzvah. So he spends half his article talking about the response of the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer was asked, why no Hasidic rabbis go on Aliyah? And we're talking about the mid-1800s, late 1800s, the Zionist movement is beginning. Jews are moving to Israel. Why are no Hasidic rabbi? Why do Orthodox Jews not move to Israel? So the Avnei Nezer wrote a whole tshuva. Why? Why? So he has a fascinating answer. His answer pretty much is, the answer isn't true anymore. But in the 1800s, it was true. His answer to a mitzvah, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, Yishuv. It's not a mitzvah to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's to settle, Yishuvim. To settle, what does settle mean? You have to support yourself. So to live in Israel and live on the support, especially, you know, the Orthodox movement, they had European Jews would send the money, the whole Achaluka system. So that's no mitzvah, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. That's not a mitzvah. The mitzvah is to live on the, he doesn't say it this way, but there was a very, you know, very secular Zionist, you know, live on a kibbutz and, you know, work the land, etc. So it's only if you can work and knew any benefit, then it was the Turks who were in control. So he tried to explain why the mitzvah Yishuv Eretz, it applies in theory, but the real mitzvah doesn't really apply. And therefore the Hasidic Rebbeim think it's more important to be with their flock outside of Israel, etc. But that's, he has a classic tshuva on that, on living in Israel. But in the beginning, he's a Hasidic Rebbe. He's one of the great Talmid HaChachamim in the Hasidic Rebbe. We all know not every Hasidic Rebbe was a Talmid HaChacham, and that's perfectly fine. That's, even though the Misnagdim were critical of that, that's not, I don't think that's at all the critical point. I think in many ways that's a positive point. The number one job of a rabbi is not to be a Talmid HaChacham. That's the number one job of a Rosh Yeshiva. The number maybe today is to fundraise, unfortunately, but that's not supposed to be the job of a Rosh Yeshiva. The number one job of Rosh Yeshiva is to teach Torah. The number one job of a rabbi is to help the poor, the widows, and the orphans, as Rav Chaim Soloveitchik famously said. That's the job of a rabbi. I tell people not to learn all day. You have to close the Gemara as a rabbi. So many of the Hasidim Rebbe who were spiritual leaders, they weren't a spiritual leader, number one goal is not to be a Talmid Chacham. Okay, if he's a Talmid Chacham, it's also nice. Maybe sometimes he's not allowed to learn. Maybe he has to be a Talmid Chacham before he becomes a rabbi. It's true. Become a rabbi of a big shul, you can't learn so much anymore. Okay, there are things that are more important. Anyway, so he writes in his introduction that there's some people who say that if you enjoy learning, if you get pleasure from learning, it takes away from lishma. I have to learn lishma for its own sake, whatever that means. Because it's a mitzvah, because God commanded me for the sake of the Torah itself. If I get personal pleasure, if I enjoy the learning, somehow that lowers the lishma aspect. That's what he says, some people claim. And he writes, this is ta'ut gadol. This is a terrible mistake, terrible mistake. Adarabba, ikar, the main mitzvah of limud Torah, yotzas v'sameach. To be joyful and happy, umitaneg, and to get pleasure, belimudo, in his learning. But as the divrei Torah nivlaim b'damo, and then the Torah will be internalized. He says the main mitzvah of Torah is to enjoy learning. Learning should be fun. Learning should be fun. It should be, we should love it and do it. And that's part of the mitzvah. It has a secondary benefit that if you enjoy something, you're going to do more of it. But he doesn't even say that so much. He said it becomes part of you. Things you enjoy become part of your essence. You get excited about it. So the idea that schar mitzvah is a beautiful concept. And to feel good, to enjoy doing mitzvot should, we have to sell mitzvot that it should be fun. I think, you know, that's part of today. I don't know that that's always done. I think in certain circles, there's a great emphasis on doing mitzvah because God said so. We're sort of like you know, you're robots. We just have to listen to what God says. And we don't want to end our personal feelings. Mitzvot should be fun, which basically means you need outlets. You know, I don't want to sit here and come and criticize, but I heard there was a concert, I won't even say where, and a bunch of rabbis came out and said, you can't have a concert on Lag BaOmer. It was scheduled for Lag BaOmer. That's not the Torah method for Jews to go to a concert. People need to enjoy Torah, not just enjoy the learning Torah, but to be a religious Jew should be exciting and fun. If you don't mind, I'm just take a 30-second break and get a glass of water. So if you have any comments, write them in. I'll be back in 30 seconds. I apologize for that. Hold on. Okay, thank you. Okay. Anyway, so a Torah lifestyle should be a fun maybe is not the right word, but I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It should be an enjoyable mitzvah. Okay, so that's another idea. Schar mitzvah, the reward, the joy you get of doing a mitzvah is a mitzvah. And of course, the corollary is that the enjoyment you get for an aveira, we're going to have to talk about that. Is that true? When you enjoy the sin, that's also part of it. That's what makes the sin, you know, worse, that I get sort of a lot of benefit from it. Okay. By the way, you have to figure out how this reconciles. Okay, we'll leave that to Rambam. Maybe we'll come back to that later. Now, on the sin side, so I just mentioned it would appear that if you enjoy the sin, that's even worse. So the question is that really true? Because normally we say that, you know, if you want to do a mitzvah and you can't do the mitzvah, you get a reward for the mitzvah. If you want to sin and you don't sin, you don't get punished. That's nothing bad. But I don't think that really applies here. The idea, the fact that we get, you know, hana, pleasure from the sin, does make the sin sort of more part of us. Just like by getting joy from the mitzvah becomes more part of us, when the sin, enjoyment becomes part of us. Now, of course, the only reason to sin is to enjoy it. You have to be kind of silly to sin and not get any benefit from it. Rav Soloveitchik has a beautiful line, maybe you mentioned in the past, by the Haftorah on Shabbat Shuvah. It says, you know, Shuvah Yisrael, return, O Israel, ki kashalta bavonecha, because you have failed in your sins. So we normally understand because, you know, to sin is a failure. So kika shalta b'manecha, by sinning you have failed. It's time to come back and do what's right. So Rav Soloveitchik explains in a beautiful like twist. Kika shalta, you failed in how to sin. You don't even know how to sin properly. If a person cheats in business and he doesn't even make money, doesn't even get ahead, what an idiot! Like then he sinned for no purpose. The idea of sinning, in other words, the Navi is telling the Jewish people, you think by sinning you're going to get ahead. Sometimes sinning is really going to hurt you. And we see that sometimes. People who do wrong things, maybe at the time they get away with it, but years later it can come back to haunt them. And so kika shalta bavonecha, that sometimes our sin ourselves, we failed in our sins. Okay, what I want to discuss now and is the Tiferet Yisrael gives four explanations for what a mitzvah kala is. I think it's just very interesting. How do you define mitzvah kala? So he says there are four types. They're all true. In other words, they all have a different aspect. Number one, it's easy to do. It's not talking about importance. So I don't know, what's an easy mitzvah to do? So I would imagine saying hello to somebody in the morning is an easy mitzvah. I would say for an observant Jew, keeping kosher is an easy mitzvah. Easy things that are easy to do, don't take much effort, but are great mitzvah. It really has to do with our relationship with other people very often. So someone who's a nice person will find mitzvah, he'll do mitzvah left and right, and they're just easy. It's part of their personality. Okay, that's one. Number two, the mitzvah are not easy. but we're habituated to them. We do them always on a regular basis. So it's very fascinating what example he gives for this. He says the example for this is davening every day. Davening every day. It's we know how hard that is in a sense. It's boring. I mean, I always say, you know, non-observant Jews, one of the advantages they have is they go to shul when they want to. And usually when it's more, it can be more meaningful. Someone who davens every single day, you know, I don't have to tell you, people talk in shul and people this and that, and now who people don't want to go back to shul, you know, that they're used to not going to shul. Davening is a really, really hard mitzvah. It's very hard. It's the same words every day, and we don't, it's an extremely difficult thing, and it's very hard to do. But no religious Jew doesn't do it. It's like, I tell my students sometimes, it's like not getting dressed. It's like walking out of my house, you know, naked. That's the same chance you have walking in the house without putting on tefillin. They're like, well, what do you mean? Like, that's what I do. If you breathe, you put on tefillin, you know, like, so they're hard to do, but we're used to doing it. So that's the second type of mitzvah kala. And interestingly, he distinguishes between davening every day and davening on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. It's fascinating, very modern. I love the Tiferet Yisrael. I like to quote him. He lived 150 years ago. Rav Yisrael Lifshitz wrote a commentary on the Mishnah Yachin Boaz. And so we all know, I don't know, I can speak here for myself. Davening every day, three times a day is not always easy. It's what I do. It's just part of my life. Like, it's, you know, I would never think of not doing it, but it's not always, I don't always enjoy it. I always want to do it. It's just what I do. But often Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah, the davening is beautiful and it's meaningful and powerful. And I know most years, when Yom Kippur ends, I don't want to look at a newspaper. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to turn on the radio. I want to live in the dream world I was living in for 25 years. The beautiful nigunim and the davening and the intensity. It's all very, 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 very beautiful. The Tiferet Yisrael recognize that. And that's because I daven every day, right? If I only go to shul Yom Kippur, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, it's not going to be meaningful. But you go every day, then it means we all know this, that the worst 3 days of the year for a non-observant Jew to go to shul are Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. You want to encourage a Jew not to come to shul? Tell them, here, I want you to come to shul 3 days a year. Come on Rosh Hashanah, the 2 days Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, because those are the most dry holidays. That's when you got to come to shul. That's the way to ensure they're not going to come again until next year. If you can tell them to come on Purim, Simchas Torah, and Friday night, that's what I would do. Come Friday night. It's less than an hour, and it's nice, and singing at home in under an hour. Come on Purim, get some contests, and make noise, and yell, and scream, and jump, fun, and Simchas Torah, can dance, and Kiddush in the middle. That's when you want people to come to shul. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is. But so the Tiferet Yisrael said there's another type. It's easy to do because we do it all the time. But it's not so easy. We only do it because we're creatures of habit, and that's we're brought up the way, and that's what we do. Okay, then the third type of easy mitzvah is that our mind forces us to do it. These are mitzvah that everybody knows. Honoring parents. The example, honoring parents, and the other example he gives, mifnei sevat takum. Very interesting. You have to stand up for an older person. I remember where. Remember when we were on sabbatical in Israel, I was 9 years old. And Tova, you remember, of course, Tova was a little bit older. We'd go on the bus, the 15 bus. We had an apartment in Disraeli Street in Tel Aviv, if you know the area. I was nine. I was in grade four in Dugma in Israel. And every time I go on the bus and somebody go on my, and I'd get a seat, my parents would always tell me I have to get up because some older person would walk on the bus. And in Israel, you know, everybody, you have to get up for older people. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. So the Tiferet Yisrael says that's a mitzvah that anybody who has any intelligence, hachricho, your intelligence forces you to do. What kind of a person can sit on a seat on a subway or the bus and there's a pregnant woman or an older person who's there and they don't get up their seat? So it's an easy mitzvah to do because it's our moral fiber. We can't not do it. Unfortunately, this isn't always true for everybody. And the fourth type of mitzvah that's easy, he says, is a mitzvah we enjoy. The fun mitzvah, the examples he give is eating on Shabbos. It's a mitzvah, right? We love the mitzvah. To eat a nice meal is a mitzvah. That's a really easy mitzvah. And very The other thing he actually says fascinatingly is mitzvot that bring us honor. What does it mean? People are going to say, ooh. What are those mitzvot? So he writes, a person has a nice talis, nice tefillin, nice lulav, and a nice etrog. In other words, people come to shul, they want to show off their beautiful etrog, their beautiful lulav, and people, so that's, it's easy for me to spend an extra $50 on an etrog, because I know all my friends are going to say, ooh, that's so nice, and so I don't know that that's necessarily, I know it isn't a good thing, actually, but those are the four types of mitzvot that the Tiferes Yisrael says are, that's what the Mishnah means by a mitzvah kala. It means it's easy to do, we're used to it, we do it, it's obvious that it has to be done, and it's what we enjoy. So what's the point of the Mishnah? Have he rats the mitzvah kala kibbechamura? So he says that when we do these mitzvot, we should do it because God has commanded us. This is, again, a fascinating comment. It doesn't contradict what the Eklei tell. I'll get back to that in a moment. In other words, we should do the mitzvah not because it's easy and we enjoy it, but we should do it because we recognize it's part of God's will. Now, those things don't have to contradict. That's the tension, and I think that's what the Eklei tell was talking about. A lot of you say, well, if I enjoy the mitzvah, then that means I'm not doing it because I'm not doing it as a mitzvah. I'm not doing it as God commanded it. I'm doing it because I enjoy it. So there is that fear, but that's exactly what the Eklei tell is saying. You can have both. I can enjoy the mitzvah, but I still do it because God has commanded. I know, in other words, the greatest enjoyment, Rav Soloveitchik always explained with this week's Parsha. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem Elokechem shivat yamim, right? This Parshat Emor, the holiday, the main section of the Torah dealing with the holidays, the biggest, you know, summary of the five, you know, biblical holidays. And we know that the special mitzvah on the holidays is to be happy, the samachta. And we know that there are three basic ways to be happy in halakha. There are three, what do you mean to be happy? So there's a subjective mitzvah to be happy. That's the ultimate, that's the feeling. But there are three concrete steps that the halakha demands that we do to be happy. One is eating, basar b'yayin, or buying new clothes, the physical, you know, pleasure. Number two is learning Torah, pikudei shem yishrem b'samchei lev. And number three is giving charity. As the Rambam writes, a person who doesn't give charity in Yom Tov, he's just filling up his stomach. That's not the mitzvah to share. And we know, we just said, that's a part of the joy to help other people. So the mitzvah of simcha means to share with others, to get physical pleasure, yet intellectual stimulation. Those are the three basic ways. And then Rav Soloveitchik says, but those are all leading to one goal. That's all just the basics. The ultimate in simcha is to feel the presence of God. Usmachtem lifnei Hashem Elokechem shivat yamim. I say by Sukkot, rejoice lifnei Hashem. One who feels the presence of God is always going to be happy. Well, lifnei Hashem, being in the presence of God, the feeling that is such a tremendous feeling. It's hard. That's the feeling you get on Yom Kippur sometimes. If you daven all year, every day, when you're not so much in the presence of God, you don't feel it. You come on Yom Kippur and you get the intensity, you feel the presence of God. There's no greater joy. And that's, of course, what the Talmud says, that the happiest days of the year were Tu B'Av and Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, we come lifnei Hashem. Lifnei Hashem titaru. We purify ourselves before our God. So that's going to be the happiest day of the year. So being happy and being in the presence of God are not only are they not mutually exclusive, they have to complement each other. So it's very important. That's what the Eklei tell is saying. The purpose of mitzvot is to enjoy it. That doesn't mean you don't believe it's commanded from God. You should believe it's commanded from God. And because of that, you have great enjoyment when you do the mitzvah. So it's an interesting discussion, not really for now. You know, let's say an atheist. Yeah, a very nice atheist, you know, he's a very wonderful person. He doesn't believe in anything. That's okay, whatever. That's it's not for me to judge. And so this person does many mitzvot. He gives tzedakah, and he doesn't gossip, and he doesn't take revenge, and he honors his parents, and he helps the elderly, all the beautiful mitzvot of the Torah. So how does the fact that he's doing it as an atheist impact on his mitzvot? That's not really our discussion for now, but I will say it's like there's a discussion halakha. I think we all understand this is better than the following case where there's a discussion halakha. Do you fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah? I'm walking on the street, and unbeknownst to me, I have a hole in my wallet or a hole in my pocket, and my wallet falls out, or a $20 bill falls out of my my shirt pocket, and a poor person picks it up. So I did staka. I did staka. I had zero intent to give staka. It was a total accident. The wife fulfilled the mitzvah of staka. So many people say, yes, maybe it's not on the highest level. The bottom line is, mitzvah pein adam acharo, to help other people. I helped other people. It's unwittingly. We sort of have this idea that God brings merit through the meritorious and suffering, you know, through the bad, the megalgel, zakai, you know, zchut ha'yidei zakai. So I don't want to get into the theological ideas, but some say that even that's a mitzvah. The fact that you didn't intend to do a mitzvah here, an atheist intends to do a mitzvah. He doesn't intend to do it as a mitzvah. It is a mitzvah. He has this human feeling that he may not recognize where it comes from. So anyways, but that's, but the ideal is to feel you're the presence of God, to know when I help somebody and do a mitzvah in the presence of God, and to enjoy it, to be sas, the sameach u'mitaneg. It's just three expressions, simcha, sason, and oneg, when you do a mitzvah. So that's a beautiful concept. Okay, then he adds, heavy ruts mean borech min aveira, you have to run away from sin. It's just interesting what he points out. Again, it's obvious if you think about it. You have to run away from sin when you have no desire to sin. When you have a desire to sin, it's very hard to run away. In other words, because the idea is once I get involved in A, I'm going to lead to B, C, D, and E. The idea is avoid sin when I have no when I have no desire to do sin. That's the time I should run away from sin. But in other words, I shouldn't go near there. It's a bad place to go, but I don't care. I'm not interested in that. So no, you're not allowed to do that. Run away even if you have no yetzer hara to do it. I don't know, maybe, okay. And of course we know one avera leads to another. And this, of course, everybody knows. Nobody starts at murder or financial fraud. Somebody doesn't start embezzling $1 million. They start by cheating on a high school test, and then they plagiarize some paper in university, and you know, everything builds. People don't start like that, and they have to nip it in the bud. That's the whole theory. What they had in New York in criminology, you know, get all the squeegee kids, right? Get rid of graffiti. I think that was the theme of the Tipping Point, in Malcolm Gladwell's book. That I think it was actually was Giuliani. I think when he was mayor of New York, who was the one who went after the graffiti and the, you know, people doing your windshield wipers when you didn't want them. Start with the small crime and all the broken stuff and, you know, the buildings in the South Bronx that have no windows, you know, fix all those little things and then the big crime goes away. That's mean you have to avera go one of ischar avera, the reward for an avera is another avera. Of course, it's funny, the expression schar. So that's before. Yes, you enjoy avera. So obviously, that's why people sin, because they enjoy it. You hope that's why they sin. The person, you know. So, but that's the only reward they get. So that's what we have to do. We have to know it's the environment we're in. That's what the Mishnah is saying. We should run to do mitzvot. We should run because we love to do mitzvot, not just because it's the right thing to do, because it's enjoyable. And things you want to do, you're eager to, you count down. It's Sfirat Omer, right? That's the safer. It's not the way it's presented in the Torah. This is a rabbinic overlay. For sure, this is not the meaning of the Torah, but the Sefer HaChinuch says, we count Sfirat Omer because we're excited. We're going to get the Torah on Shavuot. That's not how it's presented in the Torah, but that's we're going to get the Torah. So we're excited. When you're excited, you count down the days. You know, school's over in 43 days. As people, the students count, whatever you're excited for. Okay, and lastly, I'll end with the Rambam. The Rambam gives examples. What's a mitzvah kala? A mitzvah kala, so the Rambam says, it's a mitzvah that people take lightly. It's not so much it's easy, or it's you're habituated to it, or you enjoy it. Mitzvot kalot are those mitzvot that people don't take importance. Kind of like what Rashi says. Vaya ekev tishmeun, right? Ekev tishmeun, it's a weird word. Your heel, Yaakov. If you should listen, what does that mean? So Rashi explains the mitzvot that a person, he steps on them, dash. People assert the mitzvot. Every mitzvah depends on muscle. That's why even the Sefer Torah and the Aron, certain mitzvot and certain are very lucky and certain mitzvot are not so lucky. And that changes from generation to generation. We're in a generation where, at least in the observant community, learning Torah has gotten lucky. learning Torah, everybody learns Torah today. Everybody knows the importance. It wasn't always like that. For good reasons, perhaps. Different mitzvot in different time periods take on, they become more popular, less popular. I don't know, just the way society changes, people change, environments change. So the Rambam says, mitzvot, that people are kalot. What are the two examples he gave? Anybody know what the two examples the Rambam gave? One of them, I think, is a little bit famous. Maybe you've heard quoted. The other one, I think, is kind of surprising. Anybody know what the examples the Rambam gives for a mitzvah kala, a lay mitzvah? So, talking about limitat lashon hakodesh, speaking Hebrew, to learn to speak Hebrew, the importance of speaking Hebrew. So it's interesting, you know, I sometimes like to bring in stories from my experiences in chat. So this year, I just finished a quadmester last week, we call it. We divided the year into four quadmesters. So I was teaching contemporary halakha. And so it's their final product. They had to interview somebody in front of the whole class. It was really quite fascinating. It was really very, I found it fascinating. I know the kids really liked it. So they interviewed one of the groups interviewed a rabbi here in Toronto, and there was actually a rabbi in a conservative shul, a traditional rabbi in a traditional conservative shul. That's a pluralistic school. It was actually the only non-Orthodox person they interviewed, but that's irrelevant. And so they asked him about different challenges or whatever in halakha. He said that one of the biggest, you know, tragedies we have is the lack of Hebrew. He says, you cannot be a committed Jew without knowing Hebrew. He says, you cannot know our text. And he was really emphasizing Hebrew. And we all know, I think we've spoken about this, that in North America, Hebrew's gone the way of the dodo bird. You know, it used to be schools where Ifrit b'Ifrit fully, and they're no longer Ifrit b'Ifrit. Very few schools are Ifrit b'Ifrit. We mentioned this already. So the learning Hebrew is the springboard. If we want to explain that mitzvah goreh mitzvah, run to a mitzvah kala, because one mitzvah leads to another. Run to learning Hebrew, because if you learn Hebrew, you can engage with our text. And it's nice, yes, everything's in English, and that's all great, but it's also all terrible. It's great and terrible at the same time. We mentioned this already, because people are lazy. They do the crutch of they don't study our text. And a lot of the stuff you read in English, it's infuriating, especially how halakha works, because they don't present the whole truth, because they don't think people are capable of hearing the truth. Because, you know, in Hebrew, they present it much more than in English. So whatever. So that's just fascinating. The Rambam says the mitzvah kali you have to run to. But what can I say? I'm just telling you I don't say it. That's what the Rambam says. The second mitzvah, he says, is simchat haregel. Very interesting. Enjoying the holiday, enjoying the yontif. I don't know why that's a mitzvah kala that people don't take seriously, but that's what Rambam said. The mitzvah people know, like Simchat HaRegel. Maybe, I don't know, maybe that's important, but that's the example he gives, the enjoyment of Yontif. And then he contrasts those to the mitzvah that everybody takes really seriously. And what are those mitzvot? He says, Brit Milah. We know that already from the time of the Gemara. The Gemara already speaks about that. How did the Gemara know? But 2,000 years ago, everybody does Brit Milah. I mean, not everybody, but 98% of Jews have a Brit Milah. I know when I was serving as a pulpit rabbi, and we had one of the big moalim in the city was a member of our shul. He did our four boys, did the Brit Milah. And he would often get called to do a Brit Milah for an intermarried couple, even if the baby wasn't Jewish. I'm both sides. So if the mother's Jewish, okay, of course the kid needs a Brit Milah. But often there'd be an intermarriage with no conversion, and the father was Jewish and the mother was not. But of course, I'm Jewish. I want my kid to have a Brit Milah. And I know we used to do a Brit Milah. For the kids, people want a Brit Milah. Everybody takes that very importantly. He says, Pesach, okay, that people take seriously. He talks really on the Korban Pesach, which you don't have, but people understand, we know Pesach takes seriously. And it's interesting, the other mitzvah he mentions is one that we all take really seriously. It's tzitzis, mitzvah tzitzit. So it's true, religious people wear tzitzit. I mean, men, I guess, okay, women if they want. That was Lori Novak Shir, should can woman wear tzitzit? We're not going there. But the Rambam says that's when they take import. So I just find that an interesting example, because as we know, the mitzvah of tzitzit is not obligatory. That's the proof that people take it seriously. We often forget that there's no requirement to wear any tzitzit, only if you have a four-corner garment. If you don't have a four-corner garment, you don't have to wear tzitzit. We don't have four-corner garments. That's not our style of clothing. But Jews love mitzvot so much. We love to do mitzvot. We run to mitzvot. So we go out and we buy a special four-corner garment so that we could put tzitzit on it and wear the tzitzit. And that's why, of course, the custom is that, let's say, that, you know, single people don't wear a talit. What do you mean? I say, I'm single. I'll wear tefillin when I get married. Well, what do you mean you wear tefillin when you get married? The bar mitzvah. Why not say the same thing, Tali? Well, no, because you don't really have to wear one. You don't have to buy four-corner garments. So that's, in a sense, the proof. There is no mitzvah to wear tzitzit. It's a mitzvah if you have a four-corner garment. How many people have a fence on the roof? It's the same thing. We don't build our houses with flat roofs in order to put a fence on top of the roof. We don't do that. Maybe it's hard. It's expensive. In Canada, it wouldn't work. The snow and the ice. Maybe in Israel, it could work better. Can't work here, but we don't do that. We do it by tzitzit. It's interesting. So, but that's a mitzvah we all take seriously. What's kind of really interesting is that the Rav Moshe Feinstein has a famous, you know, tshuva we mentioned in the past, that he compares living in Israel to tzitzit. I mentioned before the Avnei Neser. Why didn't he move to Israel? Why the Hasidic rabbis? So he says, no, because we can't settle the land. There won't be an Israeli economy that will grow. Today, of course, that is not true, but that's what he said. And there was a lot of truth to what he said. Rav Moshe said, no, Rav Moshe was asked about living in Israel. So Rav Moshe said, you don't have to live in Israel. It's a great, if you live in Israel, it's a great mitzvah. If you have a four, and he compares it like tzitzit. You don't have to wear tzitzit, but if you want to do a mitzvah, you'll buy four-corner garment and wear tzitzit. So it's true. It's very beautiful to live in Israel. Of course, that's the style in Rav Moshe. See, I think, if I can analyze, Rav Moshe always wanted to justify, like great, the tradition of the ballet, Atosafot. We always want to justify the customs of observant people. We don't want to say a whole observant community is doing something wrong. So how is it that there are 500,000 Shomer Shabbos Jews who accept the authority of the Torah, who live in Toronto and New York and Baltimore and California? How do we all live here? It says in the Torah we have to live in Israel. Why don't we get up and move? So it could be the answer is we're all wrong. That's probably the answer. With rare exceptions, there are exceptions, we should move. Rav Moshe didn't want to say that. So Rav Moshe said, you don't have to live in Israel. You don't have to live in Israel. And he's not the only one who says that. It's nice and you get a great mitzvah, but it's not obligatory. It's like tzitzit. So that's fascinating. Rav Moshe had the same thing on smoking, by the way. That's his famous view. Rav Moshe never forbade smoking. The RCA, of course, have come to America and said it is forbidden. Maybe today it'd be different. Rabbi Tendler, his son-in-law, said that smoking is worse than eating pork, and it was, you can publish it, and it was published, and you know, because it's dangerous and people can have fish. But Rav Moshe says so many religious Jews smoke. I mean, this is in the 50s and the 60s, really. How can we say that they're all doing wrong? So that was an idea of Rav Moshe. It's a beautiful idea. We always want to look for a way. So he quoted the pasuk by smoking, Shomer Petai Hashem. If so, getting in a car is also dangerous, but most of the time it isn't dangerous. Most people, thank God. So he compares smoking. It's a little bit difficult because it's clearly not comparable, but that's what he did. Anyways, that's Rav Moshe. Okay, I see it's a little later than I thought of. I thought I'd get to Mishnah Gimel, but okay, we'll leave that for next week. I see there, just let me take a look at a couple questions, then we'll do a quick review. Judged by the punishment, that is correct. In negative mitzvot, we can see what's more important by if there's a death penalty or not. But even in negative mitzvot, sometimes they take on historical reasons. But in positive mitzvot, we can't. We have no way to know because the Torah never tells us, with very rare exceptions. Brit Milah is an exception, Korban Pesach. That's what the Rambam's talking about, because that is mentioned correct. But normally we can't know. So there are historical reasons and personal reasons. Okay, reach for the top, not the stars. It was a show. It doesn't exist anymore. I think it does exist, just not on TV anymore. The effect that doing mitzvot has on forming our character, right? Mitzvah gerer, mitzvah correct. The purpose of mitzvot is to develop our character. I didn't talk about that now, but excellent point, Debbie. Yes, there's mitzvot between man and God, between man and man and ourselves. We have to develop our character. That was last week's shiur, not how to be wealthy and wise and, you know. But absolutely want to develop our character. Easy versus hard mitzvah. Can you discuss in light of conversion? I'm not sure what you mean by that. If conversion in a sense is an easy mitzvah. In other words, it's technically easy. If you look in the Gemara and Ruth, we're coming up to Shavuot. Ruth is the model convert. The Gemara is one page on conversion. It was not complicated. You taught the convert. You said to the convert, you know, being a Jew, what kind of an idiot are you? You know, Jews are despised. There's anti-Semitism, genocide, Holocaust, pogroms. What kind of idiot wants to be a Jew? That's what the Gemara says. Do you know the Jewish people, what happened, their history? It says, yeah, I know, but I want to be part of Jews. They're such a wonderful people. We accept all the person has to do is identify as a Jew. That's Rav Shlomo Beitchik. The first thing in conversion is I'm a member of the historical destiny of the Jewish people. What the Jewish people, I want to be part. Then the Mishnah says you teach a mitzvot kalot, the chamorot. Maybe that's what you're referring to. The Gemara says you teach a miksat mitzvot kalot, of little of the light mitzvot and little of the heavy mitzvot. And then the Gemara lists off of six mitzvot, without telling you which is the kal and which is the hard, the heavy, the chamur, and there are four mitzvot on staka, leket shichacha peya, the gleanings of the field, the dropping, that's of course how Ruth became a convert, so it ties in the story of Ruth, but leket shichacha peya, and maser ani, one, your tithe to the poor, teach those mitzvot, and Shabbat, and kashrut, that's all the Gemara mentioned, teach those six mitzvot, could be the assumption is they knew other mitzvot in ancient times, that's the only thing the Gemara mentioned, mitzvot kala v'chamura, a little bit, give them a sprinkling of Judaism, those mitzvot, and then you convert them. So the process was really, really simple. The complicating process, hey, this is not, we don't have time and not the place, and you know, the shiur on conversion, what do you do, you know, how committed they have to be, accepted. We know the opinions are much wider in this expressed in today's world, and everybody knows that. In the 60s, 70s, it was very common and considered appropriate to convert, for Orthodox rabbis to convert Jews who they knew would continue driving on Shabbat and would not be observing that was the norm. Everybody knows that. Today, that's not the norm at all. Today, they won't accept conversion like that. That's for another time. Okay, the emphasis on Musar and some yeshiva make the reason doing mitzvot the fear factor. Yes, I think that's a terrible thing. We shouldn't do, I mean, there is a notion of yira, fear, but that shouldn't be the motivating factor. That's the lowest form. If that's all we have, that's all we have. But I mentioned, in the Vardak and Slobodka, the two great, like Musar Yeshivot. So in the Vardak, where the Aruch HaShulchan was from, in the Vardak, they used to say, man is a nobody. You know, they used to train you to go into a hardware store and ask for a dozen eggs. So you wouldn't care what people thought about you. You would make yourself look like a fool. And the Vardak was, man is a nobody. We're like animals. We're nothing. We're yuck. That was, and in Slobodka was the exact, man is so great. Man is, wow, you're created. You're godly. You're created in God's image. How can you sin? You're so wonderful. But right, I there is a trend to emphasize fear, but I think, We know the Hasidic movement emphasized joy, for sure. And you're right, the Misnagdic world didn't emphasize it to the same degree. That's what he's talking about, the ugly tal, Sokotcher Rebbe, he's a Hasidic Rebbe. And we know the Hasidic movement was very popular. People like to be happy more than they like to be sad. So, you know, give him a reason to have a Kiddush on a Yahrzeit instead of a fast day, and they'll opt for a Kiddush all the time. Even the Misnagdic, they have a Kiddush on a Yahrzeit. Shulchan Aruch says you fast on a Yahrzeit. And the Hasidim introduced the Kiddush. No. Okay. All right. Running by Rechava Palmach. Okay. Yeah, the broken windows. Okay. I think that's it. So just in a 30-second review, running to mitzvot. Got to run. Got to be careful. Can't run over people on your way to mitzvot. But we want to run to mitzvah because it gets us in the environment. It's not because of how important it is, because once you're in the environment of mitzvah, you'll do other mitzvah. Once you're in the environment of sin, you'll do other sin. One leads to another. There are historical reasons, personal reasons why certain mitzvah become better than others, more important than others. We should enjoy doing mitzvah. The reward, the feeling you get from doing mitzvah, that's a great mitzvah too. And that's a wonderful thing to Judaism should be fun, enjoyable, pleasurable. You should... And we should impress on other people how beautiful it is to meet you. Ramosha finds this. I didn't say, oh, there's new things on your view. Ramosha said one of the terrible things people would say, it's, I don't know Yiddish, it's schwer zu sein a Yid. It's hard to be Jewish. That's a terrible thing. You want to raise kids in America, tell them, so why, who wants to be Jewish? You have to tell people it's beautiful to be Jewish. It's easy to be Jewish. Anything, and I have to tell easiness there, but anything meaningful is hard. But you don't say it's hard. Say it's meaningful, it's beautiful. And then if people have that, they're willing to work hard. Anything meaningful, you work hard at. Okay, and then we discussed the Tiferet Yisrael, easy to do, different types of mitzvot, enjoyment, seichel. Mitzvot, we have to know they come from God, but that's not a contradiction to enjoying the mitzvot and the importance of Hebrew. Hebrew and Simchat HaRekel, enjoying the rekel. Those are mitzvot kalot that we have to take just as seriously as Mila and Korban Pesach and Sitzes. Okay. Any other questions, happy to take them. I want to thank everybody. Wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom. As I mentioned, I'll send an email later on today, please God. Daniel Feldman Shear on Sunday will not take place this week. He can't make it. He's out of town, I believe. And Rabbi Liebtag will start off on 11:15 on Sunday morning on Shavuot. And then we'll have all the regular Shearim next Thursday night, Parsha Shear. Shaul Robinson of Lincoln Square Synagogue will be giving the Parsha Shear. And we look forward to learning with you. And we should hear her good things. B'surot tovot. I want to wish everybody a Shabbat Shalom and have a wonderful day. And thank you very much.
Shabbat Shalom.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
Toda rabba, Shabbat Shalom. All the best, Jay.
Okay, thank you.